Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to today's broadcast. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick, wishing you all a very happy Easter. In a few moments, you can expect to join Jill Bevilacqua for her very personal reflection on this Easter Sunday Gospel. But first, we join Pope Benedict XVI for his Easter blessing to the city and to the world, known as the Urbi and Orbi blessing.
Et benedictio Dei omnipotentis, Patris et Filii et Spiritus Sancti, descendat super vos et maneat semper.
Amen.
May the grace and joy of the risen Christ be with you all.
Ich hebe Paschali laude, simolem Christiani.
Agnus Domini est, Christus in nocens patris, reconciliami peccatores.
May the grace and joy of the risen Christ be with you all, Benedict XVI said in English. English was just one of the languages the Pope greeted pilgrims in on Sunday. There were 63 more, including Irish. And after these greetings in all these languages, he had special words of comfort in Italian for the victims of the recent earthquake, which hit the city of Aquila and its surrounding towns and villages in this mountainous area of Abruzzo this past week.
In particolare a quanti soffrono a causa del terremoto, il Cristo risuscitato guidi tutti.
In this Urbi and Orbi message, delivered from the loggia overlooking St. Peter's Square, where he just presided over Holy Mass, the Holy Father highlighted how the proclamation of the Lord's resurrection lightens up the dark regions of the world in which we live. I'm referring, he stressed, particularly to materialism, to a vision of the world that is unable to move beyond what is scientifically verifiable and retreats cheerlessly into a sense of emptiness, which is thought to be the definitive destiny of human life. It is a fact that if Christ had not risen, the emptiness would be set to prevail. If we take away Christ and his resurrection, there is no escape for man, and every one of his hopes remains an illusion. And the Pope added, even if through Easter Christ has destroyed the root of evil,
se mediante la Pasqua Cristo ha estirpato la radice del male,
he still wants the assistance of men and women in every time and place who help him to affirm his victory using his own weapons, the weapons of justice and truth.
Con le sue stesse armi, le armi della giustizia e della verità.
Mercy, forgiveness and love.
Della misericordia, del perdono e dell'amore.
A message, he added, he'd taken with him in his recent apostolic journey to the African continent when he visited Cameroon and Angola. Africa, he insisted, suffers disproportionately from the often forgotten, cruel and unending conflicts that are causing so much bloodshed and destruction in several of her nations, as well as from hunger, poverty and disease. It's this same message, Benedict XVI remarked, that he'll take with him to the Holy Land in mid-May, where reconciliation, difficult but indispensable, is a precondition for a future of overall security and peaceful coexistence, and can only be achieved through renewed, persevering and sincere effort to resolve the Israeli-Palestinian conflicts. My thoughts, the Pope commented, move from the Holy Land to neighboring countries, to the Middle East, to the whole world, at a time of world food shortage, of financial turmoil, of old and new forms of poverty, of disturbing climate change, of violence and deprivation, which force many to leave their homelands in search of a less precarious form of existence, of the ever-present threat of terrorism, of growing fears over the future. It is urgent to rediscover grounds for hope. Let no one draw back from this peaceful battle that has been launched by Christ's resurrection. Resurrectio Domini spes nostra.
Resurrectio Domini spes nostra.
The resurrection of Christ is our hope.
La risurrezione di Cristo è la nostra speranza.
This the Church proclaims today with joy. She announces the hope that is now firm and invincible because God has raised Jesus Christ from the dead. She communicates the hope that she carries in her heart and wishes to share with all people in every place, especially where Christians suffer persecution because of their faith and their commitment to justice and peace. She invokes the hope that can call forth the courage to do good, even when it costs, especially when it costs.
Noi gridiamo con gioia il nostro Alleluia.
Now we join Jill Bevilacqua. As always, her programme by the intriguing title of There's More in the Sunday Gospel Than Meets the Eye begins with Sean Patrick Lovett reading the Sunday Gospel for us. Stay tuned.
Early in the morning on the first day of the week, while it was still dark, Mary Magdalene came to the tomb. She saw that the stone had been moved away. So she ran off to Simon Peter and the other disciple, the one Jesus loved, and told them, "The Lord has been taken from the tomb. We don't know where they have put him." At that, Peter and the other disciple started out on their way toward the tomb. They were running side by side, but then the other disciple outran Peter and reached the tomb first. He did not enter, but bent down to peer in, and saw the wrappings lying on the ground. Presently, Simon Peter came along behind him and entered the tomb. He observed the wrappings on the ground and saw the piece of cloth, which had covered the head, not lying with the wrappings, but rolled up in a place by itself. Then the disciple who had arrived first at the tomb went in. He saw and believed. Remember, as yet, they did not understand the scripture that Jesus had to rise from the dead.
When Jesus was buried on the evening of Good Friday, there was not only among his friends an atmosphere of sadness and despondency, but also a sense of urgency. For it was the vigil of the Sabbath, known as the Day of Preparation. And as a biblical scholar writes,
that particular Sabbath was especially festive because it coincided with the Passover. The obligation to rest was one of the most binding and began with the appearance of the first stars of the vigil.
This is confirmed by what Luke writes.
It was preparation day, and the Sabbath was imminent. Meanwhile, the women who had come from Galilee with Jesus were following behind. They took note of the tomb and of the position of the body. Then they returned and prepared spices and ointments, and on the Sabbath day they rested, as the law required.
Whether they slept, though, is another matter. It must surely have been the longest Sabbath they ever remembered. And unknown to them, it was also the last Sabbath of all, to be lived in the old way, or at any rate with any real conviction. And at some point, as we may read,
the first day of the week, in memory of Jesus' resurrection, was named by Christians the Lord's Day, and the obligation of keeping it as a holy day was transferred to it from the Sabbath.
Wrote St. Jerome in the 4th century.
The Lord's Day, the day of the resurrection, the day of Christians. That is our day.
And St. Isidore in the 7th century wrote,
this day the Jews did not observe, but it was declared by the Christians in honour of the Lord's resurrection, and the celebration began from that time.
But for the holy women on that first Easter morning, this was all in the future. And the old Sabbath was barely over when, at the first sight of dawn, as Luke writes, they went to the tomb with the spices they had prepared. The embalming, however, was never to take place. Meanwhile, what had been going on during that historic Sabbath? Let's listen to this extract from an old homily for Holy Saturday, which is quoted in the 1992 Catechism.
Thank you. Today, there is a great silence on the earth, a great silence and solitude, a great silence because the King is sleeping. The earth is dismayed and is silent because God made flesh has fallen asleep and has woken those who had been sleeping for centuries. He is going to look for the first father, like the lost sheep. He wants to go down to visit those who sit in darkness and in the shadow of death. God and his Son go to free from their sufferings Adam and Eve, who are in prison. I am your God, who have become your Son for you. Awake, you who sleep. In fact, I did not create you to remain a prisoner in hell. Arise from the dead. I am the life of the dead.
He descended into hell. The third day he rose again from the dead. In the section devoted to an explanation of the Apostles' Creed, the Catechism comments.
The descent of Christ into the underworld and his resurrection from the dead on the third day are professed in the same article of faith, because in his Easter he made life spring forth from the abyss of death.
Today we very rarely reflect on the descent into hell, perhaps because the word suffers from ambiguity, but also because of our modern distaste for all references to hell and devils. But, as one scholar writes, medieval men and women took the devil and his works more seriously. In their pageants and miracle plays, Christ's descent into hell was vividly represented. The harrowing of hell, as it was called, was based on a popular legend which had its origin in the apocryphal Gospel of Nicodemus, writes our scholar.
This legend is dramatized in all the English cycles, represented in sculpture and painted glass, and used again and again in the sermons.
A brilliant example of the harrowing of hell in stained glass can still be seen in the 15th century church of St. Mary the Virgin in Fairford, Gloucestershire. I was taken by a friend one summer day to this unique church, which has no fewer than 28 windows in stained glass portraying 1,000 figures. As the guidebook declares proudly, no other parish church in England has retained a complete set of late medieval glass. Window 6, divided into three parts, shows the deposition on the left, the entombment in the centre, and on the right, the harrowing. Here, as the guidebook explains,
Christ rescues Adam and Eve from hell and proclaims the good news to imprisoned souls. One soul, still impenitent, is seen behind red-hot bars.
And you can almost feel the heat. Although we use the word harrowing today as an adjective, meaning painful in the extreme, referring to an experience or even only something painful to watch, a dictionary will tell us that the verb to harrow was a 13th century word meaning to rob or despoil, and that it was used especially with reference to Christ's descent to hell to carry off the souls of righteous people. Back in the 9th century, these lines formed part of an Easter hymn by Rabanus Maurus, abbot of the famous monastery of Fulda in Germany.
Breathing out his soul, Christ entered the underworld. Triumphant, he banished the shadows of death. The just he snatched away. The enemy he bound, giving heaven to the good, while evil men were left in their pains.
But by Easter morning, all this has been accomplished, and the scene shifts once again to earth, to the empty tomb. What happened next, and who came to the tomb at first light, is recounted in their different ways and with varying details by all four evangelists. But who saw the risen Jesus first? This was often asked us as children by our teacher of religion. It was, of course, a catch question. Although it's not mentioned in any of the Gospels, clearly the first person Jesus appeared to must have been his mother. To the evangelists, it would have seemed too obvious to need recording. Not so obvious would have been his appearance to other women. As for who went to the tomb with the spices, among a variety of names recorded, only one appears in all four Gospels, that of Mary Magdalene. And today's Gospel, that of John, chosen to be read on Easter Sunday in all 3 years of the liturgical cycle, gives prominence to that one name, Mary Magdalene. Reading on, we find that after they'd been to the tomb, Peter and John returned home. Mary Magdalene, however, who must have followed them back to the tomb, stayed behind, weeping. And it was then that she stooped to look into the tomb. There she saw two angels, who asked her why she was weeping. "They have taken my Lord away, and I don't know where they have put him." Something prompts her to turn round, and standing there is the risen Jesus. Taking him for the gardener, she asks if he has removed the body. But he speaks only one word, Mary, and as St. John writes,
"She knew him then. Rabuni," she said in Hebrew, "master."
What followed is told this way by poet George MacDonald.
He stands in haste, he cannot stop. Home to his God he fares. "Go, tell my brothers I go up to my Father, mine and theirs." Run, Mary, lift thy heavenly voice, cry, cry and heed not how. Make all the new risen world rejoice. Its first apostle, thou.
Apostle, from the Greek apostolos, is a messenger. Mary Magdalene is described in the liturgical calendar simply as disciple of the Lord. But because of the unique privilege of being the first to see the risen Lord, she's been called the apostle of the apostles. And in the revised calendar, her feast day on the 22nd of July has been classified as an obligatory memorial for the whole church. Not only John records that Magdalene saw the risen Jesus first, Mark, in his final summing up, writes,
"He, rising early the first day of the week, appeared first to Mary Magdalene, out of whom he had cast 7 devils.
Which, as Piero Bargellini points out, does not necessarily mean that she was a sinner. For the traditional image of Mary Magdalene is that of the penitent prostitute, usually identified as the woman who poured precious ointment over the feet of Jesus, causing Judas to exclaim, "Why wasn't this ointment sold for 300 denarii and the money given to the poor?" Modern scholarship shows us a different Magdalene. Freed of her demons, she follows Jesus from Galilee, together with other women, tends to his needs, stands at the foot of the cross, and is rewarded at the tomb by the vision of the risen Lord. And now let's listen to this Easter poem by Gerard Manley Hopkins, who in the opening verse invites us symbolically to imitate the woman in the Gospel and spare no expense in celebrating the risen Christ.
"Break the box and shed the nard. Stop not now to count the cost. Hither bring pearl, opal, sard. Reck not what the poor have lost. Upon Christ throw all away. Know ye, this is Easter Day. Build his church and deck his shrine, empty though it be on earth. Ye have kept your choicest wine. Let it flow for heavenly mirth. Pluck the harp and breathe the horn. Know ye not 'tis Easter morn? Gather gladness from the skies. Take a lesson from the ground. Flowers do ope their heavenward eyes, and a springtime joy have found. Earth throws winter's robes away, decks herself for Easter Day. Beauty now for ashes wear, perfumes for the garb of woe, chaplets for dishevelled hair, dances for sad footsteps slow. Open wide your hearts that they let in joy this Easter Day. Seek God's house, in happy throng, crowded let his table be. Mingle praises, prayer and song, singing to the Trinity. Henceforth let your souls alway make each morn an Easter Day."
And warm thanks Sago, once again to Jill Bevilacqua for yet another very personal and beautiful programme. Finally, time to respect our weekly rendezvous with Joan Lewis, who as always takes a look at the past week in the Vatican. Thanks, Thanks so much for joining us once again. Joan, so as you know, over the past few days, we've been speaking about the commemorative Triduum celebrations, how Pope Benedict has been involved in these, leading right up to Easter Sunday. What I'd like to do now with you is step back in time for a moment, as we do each week, point of fact, to take a look at some of the salient moments which took place prior to that here in the Vatican.
Looking back, we really have to say that we kind of started with Palm Sunday and the ever magnificent liturgy in St. Peter's Square. There were about 30,000 people there on Palm Sunday, as I recall. And Palm Sunday is always World Youth Day also. And when it's not celebrated abroad like it was this past summer in Australia and then will be in 2011 in Madrid, it is celebrated on Palm Sunday on a diocesan level. So you had a huge number of youth in St. Peter's Square and you know, decorated. There were palms, there were olive trees. It was beautifully done. For as Easter Sunday always is due with
there
the
was a
the
quite a Roman turnout. The Romans go to St. Peter's Square on Palm Sunday.
Huge number of Romans, huge number of Roman youth, obviously, because the diocese. And of course, our listeners should be reminded that the Bishop of Rome is the Pope. So these are young people flocking to see him. And then there was a quite a large group from Madrid present in the square to receive the World Youth Day cross from the young people of Australia. And then the Pope spoke about this quite markedly during his comments in the square. And the Pope really addressed his remarks more to young people than anybody else. Again, it was World Youth Day on a diocesan level. And he told them that sacrifices made out of love for God and a desire to adhere to his truth make life very rich, great, and successful. And then referring specifically to the World Day Youth Cross, the transfer of the cross, he said this passing on of witness, in this particular case from the Australians to the Spanish youth, he said this takes on a highly symbolic value with which we express immense gratitude to God for the gifts received at the great meeting in Sydney and then for those we will receive at the meeting in Madrid. And then the Pope noted that Monday, the cross accompanied by an icon of the Virgin Mary would depart for the Spanish capital and be present there for the Good Friday procession. And that's one place, if you can't come to Rome, you got to go to Spain for the Holy Week services. Yeah. They are, throughout the country, they are absolutely incredible.
I've just been to Seville, and they have these amazing processions
in
Holy Week.
I mean, and they carry images on their shoulders. They carry
on
things
floats,
like,
floats.
There'll be like 30 men, and then it's amazing to watch them be replaced. They can't carry this huge weight, this float, and a statue, and it'll be the, you know, crucified Christ or whatever it will be. And then you've got 30 men carrying it and 30 others that slide under this and then take the place of the 30 who, you know, have just walked half a mile or whatever. So we just kind of put that little parenthesis in. But again, we're going to be speaking of Spain in very shortly because of World Youth Day. And so the cross, when it arrives in Spain, it will make a pilgrimage throughout the dioceses of Spain and then end in Madrid, of course, for World Youth Day 2011. So, but on Palm Sunday, these, again, remarks were directed mainly to youth, but we really can't neglect what the Holy Father said at the Angelus, too. That was pretty...
He uses the Angelus
to reflect on various issues very often, most often, of current interest, something in the world...
that he has particularly at heart.
Right. And he really spoke of two things. One was... he said that April 4th, that was had been the day earlier, that the United Nations had designated April 4th to raise awareness about the problem of anti-personnel mines. And the Pope noted that, of course, there was a convention that came into force banning this 10 years ago. And he said he wanted to encourage countries that have not already done so to sign without delay these instruments of international humanitarian law. And he noted that the Holy See, of course, had always supported this. And then he spoke about something so tragic. On March 31st, 200 African migrants coming to Europe trying to look for network did perish off of the coast of Italy. And the Holy Father said, we can't resign ourselves to such tragedies. They've been happening for quite some time. We know that Italy has just, you know, we're on the route, whether people are coming to Italy or going to southern
Europe.
Well,
Italy is surrounded by sea.
It's not surrounded by sea. It's like 8,000 kilometers of coastline, I think, in Italy. So this is going to happen. And the Pope says this phenomenon, you know, can't continue. And we have to coordinate strategies between the European Union and African countries and provide humanitarian issues so that this doesn't happen again, or certainly is reduced. And then actually the big story of the week occurred very, very early, as probably all of our listeners know by now. 3:32 Monday morning, a huge earthquake, said to be 6.2 on the Richter scale, struck the Abruzzo, a very central region, a very mountainous region of
Italy,
with many, many, many beautiful towns on top of little hills and everything else. And this earthquake struck right as we speak, and of course it changes usually every hour. It's something like 280 dead. 15, 17, 20,000 are living in tent cities. And I mean, the damage was just incredible, especially in L'Aquila, the capital of this province. And I mean, it's a very beautiful old historic town, Renaissance buildings gone, Baroque buildings gone. And as severe as the damage was to L'Aquila, and it's going to take Lord knows how long to, you know, rebuild, to bring people back into their homes, to rebuild homes in many cases. In the smaller towns, some of them were razed to the ground completely. And I have to say, I heard a report on, I don't remember if it was Wednesday or Thursday morning, on Vatican Radio. I talked about, their reporter was in the region, and he talked about the devastation. It's one particular town, I forgot the name. And he paused, and he said, and there are no more children in this town.
Of course, L'Aquila is very close to Rome.
It's really only 60 miles. And the church and Caritas has been very active. Oh, and the Vatican, of course, sent a 9-man team. They sent a structural engineer and 8 members of the Vatican fire department. So they've had this kind of experience, and they've had training in this kind of rescue operation and so forth. So, and another big sign of the Holy See participation will be Pope Benedict's visit. He announced at this week's Wednesday audience that he would be going to visit the area to meet the people, to show his solidarity, and to pray with them. And I'm sure that will mean, you know, more than words can say to these people. He will be going, of course, after Easter. The week after Easter is a quiet one normally for the Pope, except for the Wednesday audience. And so he's
thinking more of, you know, the devastation and the chaos there, so that he wants to go when things are a little more organized.
Oh sure, obviously. I mean, there would be a path for him to walk through, or a car to get through, or something else like that. So it's been a week really in this part of the world dominated by the tragedy, and yet another passion, obviously the passion of Christ in Holy Week and the Triduum.
Thank you, Joan. Have a very happy Easter again.
Well, likewise. My first one in the States in 19 years.
And that brings me up to time. I do hope you enjoyed this broadcast. Once again, a very happy Easter to all of you. I'm Veronica Scaresbrick, and I'd like to remind you that we'll be back again at the same time tomorrow. Should you wish to check out our website, the address is www.vaticanradio.org.
Laudator Jesus Christus.